Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the Ferris Love Podcast. Today on the show, we are joined by Monica Hinderer, licensed clinical professional counselor. Monica will be discussing with us the signs of anxiety and other concerns within our children and when it may be a good idea to consider seeking professional help. Welcome back to the show, Monica.
Hi, it's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, so we've had you on a couple seasons ago, and we'd love to kind of have you reintroduce yourself to our new members of our audience and tell us a little bit about kind of what you do and how you help people in your practice.
Awesome. So as you said, I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor in the state of Illinois. It's just a lot of letters after my name to say that I'm a therapist. I work independently. So I'm no longer kind of under guidance or supervision. And I have my own private practice. I like to say that I kind of specialize more in, I like to say family work, but I think more and more I've been like, it's actually relationship. And I'm kind of seeing the world in a very different lens in that everything is relational. And so it's kind of relationship with myself, relationship with a spouse, relationship with a child. And can then I do kind of some of that relationship work and healing. And so, a lot of the work I do is with kind of a more family system. And a lot of my expertise is kind of coming from a space of kind of adolescent work and development. So I do a lot of parent coaching and helping parents just thrive in their family unit, who they are, as they are with their child, as their child is, given our world and our society today. So that's kind of a little bit about me, I suppose.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Great. And so do you see, patients or clients that are like in their adolescent years, but then also you do meet with the parents as well so that you can discuss with them?
Yeah. So I would say I don't believe in any adolescent work that doesn't include parents. So that would be maybe something if you're thinking of sending your kiddo to therapy, I would recommend the clinician you're working with values and understands parents as the primary educators of their children. And what I mean by primary educators is that the main role and responsibility is yours. It doesn't mean that we don't outsource, right? Of course, we go to a pediatrician or we go to these other people, but that as the primary, as the point person, you're involved in the process. And so a huge part of what I tell parents is that there is something like you have 178 hours in your week, and your therapist is going to get 50 to 60 minutes of that. So what I can do in 1 hour versus the 177 you have with your kid pales in comparison, and that you know your child better than I ever will. Although I may know particular things to ask and to understand about your child or their development, there's something very profound and intimate that you know and understand about them, given that grace of state and given that parental instinct that you have. And I never want to take that away. I think that that's a really important tool in helping kids and in navigating family structures and systems.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. That's great. So let's just dive in right now and talk about kind of these first initial thoughts about stress and anxiety. This month, we're kind of discussing how to live stress-free and kind of discerning, you know, what is stress and then what turns into anxiety. We had someone on the show last week that discussed that, but I'm curious what your thoughts are for the common signs of stress and anxiety within children that parents might overlook, like that might not be a common, obviously like crying every day going to school might be a little bit of a sign of a stress, but maybe something that doesn't usually kind of trigger that idea of, oh, this might be a problem.
Yeah. Do you know what? I actually think probably the most underestimated sign of a very anxious kid is a voracious reader. And that often one of the things that we see, so I want to clarify in that psychology is more, we look at correlations instead of causations because the human person is so diverse. It's difficult to say this causes that. So I want to just preemptively, you know, say that so that I'm not scaring any listener to think, oh my gosh, my child is, you know, X, Y, Z because of this thing. There could be many reasons why someone is exhibiting a particular behavior. So my my piece of advice is to just be curious, to just see something and to just seek more understanding, because that's what's going to give us a better view into their world or, and into their needs ultimately. So a voracious reader oftentimes, though, is overwhelmed or anxious with their environment, so they escape. And I think it's underestimated because as a society, we praise and validate this. We say, what a good student, what a voracious reader, how smart, how astute, all these things. Instead of saying, well, that's interesting that they're reading a lot. I wonder why. Hmm. And maybe they are this like brainiac who just like cannot get enough of the written word and just loves to be challenged in that way. But maybe they're anxious and they're escaping reality into a fantasy world or into a different land. And so it's something I think to be curious about. There's other signs and symptoms that are going to be far more obvious, right? As you said, kind of the breaking down and the crying a lot. Oftentimes anxiety is going to manifest what we would call somatically, right? So there's psychosomatic features, which just means physically, right? So upset stomach, disruption in food, disruption in sleep, headaches, you know, they may be kind of complaining about those things. So that would be something I kind of keep an eye on. I would say, you know, has their food changed? Has their sleep changed? Are they having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? Are they having more headaches? Things like that I would kind of be clued into. And then if they're just starting to participate in avoidant behavior, our anxiety often has us kind of running away. It's a good thing, right? I don't want anyone to live an anxious-free or stress-free life. These are just feelings that are indicators for us. And I don't need to deaden those indicators. They're important information in my life. But sometimes they can become overreactive. And that's, I think, what we want to be careful of, is that they're not becoming so overactive in our life that we're no longer participating in social activities or in things that scare us and so forth.
Okay, great. Have you noticed, whether in your practice or just in your research and study, have you noticed like certain, I think we can just assume adolescent, like teenagers and all that are more of the stress anxiety, but have you noticed that there are other trends with other ages of developmental stages that kind of tend to potentially be more prone to that stress and anxiety?
I just think it looks different in the stages, right? So I don't know, in our kind of toddler years, 1 to 3, we're going to see more separation anxiety as this kid is learning to separate from kind of this home base. And ideally we want them to wander and come back, right? That touch point. We're going to see this in little kids at the park, right? They're kind of clinging to mom's leg. And then the healthy, secure, attached kid with moderate anxiety that says, this could be scary, but I'm going to try it, is going to wander away up and then come back, right? Wander away, but like, oh, I see mom, I'm okay. So there's different types of anxiety depending on kind of our ages. So then we're thinking, okay, we're coming into kind of the school age, 5, 6, 7. And that's when it's kind of fear of the unknown, right? So are there monsters? The dark is scary. I don't like being alone. I don't know what to do with that. And then we kind of get into maybe that later adolescence, like somewhere 10, 11, 12, 8, 9, somewhere around there. And that's when the social factors come more into play, right? So there's maybe some performance anxiety. People are watching me. Like everybody sees me. Everyone's looking at me. It's kind of the center stage theory, right? This is the kid who's like, everybody knows that I have a pimple on my face. And as the adult, we're sitting here and we're saying, no, nobody is looking, like nobody really cares, but center stage, like all eyes are on me. So that's where we kind of start to see maybe some academic anxiety, some perfectionism might be emerging here, some social comparison. Why? Because for the first time developmentally, I'm kind of socially aware enough to know that there is comparison and there is competition and there is social standing in groups and out groups. And so this kid is wrestling with kind of coming to terms with all of that. And then we kind of get into later adolescence where there's maybe more, those become kind of more pronounced, right? In kind of the teen to college years. So you asked a little bit about trends. I think we've seen a delay in a lot of this. So it's kind of what people, I guess, would call like kind of delayed adolescence, where maybe what previous generations went through in high school generations are now going through in college. We're seeing kind of a delay in coming to some of these social understandings. Mm. I would say this has probably been in the mix for a while. I think COVID was a catalyst for some of it. I think it was already happening, but I think COVID just really was this spark that kind of sent some of these social anxieties and these things almost into hyperdrive. I think we would have gotten here at some point, but I think it just sped the process up.
Okay. Interesting. So with all this as a foundation, let's say for parents who are listening, at what point do parents, like you were mentioning a lot of things that I feel like are normal in the sense of growing up in developmental stages. At what point should a parent, you had mentioned, you know, the signs, the different things that are normal within developmental stages, at what point should parents consider maybe, okay, this is not normal anymore and we should seek some professional help or do something a little extra, you know, and maybe it's not professional help immediately, but at what stage would you say that that's where maybe we should take that direction?
Yeah, I would say for any parent where your child is starting to present a need that feels outside of your scope, that's not a bad thing. It's just a sign of like, I need to get a little bit more educated. I need some more education on this topic so that I can provide for a particular need. And so my first recommendation, almost always, there's a few exceptions, is that the parent go and get some parent coaching and go meet with a therapist and get some ideas and work on implementing at home before sending your kid. There's nothing wrong with sending your child to therapy, but I think that parents are far more capable of handling and managing some of the things that are going on. And you don't necessarily have to outsource. There's a few exceptions to that. I think that if your kid's having panic attacks or if the, cause that's really, really big. And so they're going to need to be the ones kind of in therapy directly working on some of those really important skills. Mm-hmm. Or if the anxiety is kind of manifesting or turning into kind of more OCD tendencies, where there's like strict, rigid rules, the anxiety is kind of really restricting their life. It's becoming very like everything that pushes against the anxiety is becoming kind of this explosion or this really big deal. That's when I would go, right? Because those require like really specific, very nuanced skills from a clinician to be able to kind of assess and give the child really specific things that they need. That's going to be a little bit harder to teach the parents, and the parents are going to bring that home. But I would say general kind of anxieties, fears and worries, perfectionism, these things that are slowly starting to creep up. I think parents are very capable of managing and handling this at home. They just need the correct supports to do that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I don't think you hear that very often from therapists to begin with. I think that's a really smart idea too, just to, because then the parents are involved and they remain involved, and like you said, that's what you think. And we'll go back to that, what you said earlier about just having, you know, the parent and the child kind of involved in when you do your own practice. So I love that. And when parents are considering, you know, seeking those resources either for themselves, let's start with that. Would you say go to a specific person and meet with a therapist, or do online research? Are there like different levels of things that you could do to help prepare? And then,
it depends. Honestly, it depends on your skill set and your learning style. There are some people who are really good at taking theory and general knowledge and applying it to life and life circumstances and events. And there are other people who need someone else to make the theory and idea digestible and give them concrete things to do. And it just depends on which one you are, right? Yeah. I think as a therapist, I love theory, and my job is to understand theory and principle and make it digestible for each of my clients and find a way to take this and make it fit into your life. Mm-hmm. Some people struggle with that and they need to be told directly, try this skill. Mm-hmm. So if you're the kind of person who could listen to a podcast or read a book and take nuggets away from that that you would implement into your family system or into this relationship with your child, go for it. If you're the kind of person who needs to kind of talk through issues, talk through the nuance, get concrete things, I would say reach out to a therapist, and just a lot of them will do, you know, parent coaching and kind of consultations so that you get a better kind of more specific approach to whatever issue you're experiencing.
Okay, awesome. And what would you recommend to parents? So let's say it's gotten to a point where it's like, okay, we can't, you know, do this anymore. What would you recommend to parents and how they discuss with their children about this next step of like, okay, we're seeing that we can't help you in this situation. Like how can they speak to their child about this idea of like professional help and just going to a therapist?
Yeah. I would say one advantage is that kids growing up today are so comfortable with mental health and that language. Like, I mean, I'm a therapist and I didn't even know therapy was a thing for decades. Like I had no idea there were people that you went and talked to about problems and any of this language that kids have now. And so there's a benefit to that, right? That we can just be really honest and sincere with them and say, hey, these are some things that I'm seeing or that I'm thinking, and I want to get you the help that you need. So that we always want to say it in a really positive light. They're not going to therapy because they're broken. They're going to therapy so they can thrive. Mm-hmm. And one of the analogies that I use a lot with people is that everybody in life has hurdles. We all have our strengths and our weaknesses, and the people who do really well in life are the ones who know their hurdles and know the skills they need to get over them. So this kind of, I liken it to these track runners who, you know, the Olympic hurdlers don't waste any time. Like it is as if those hurdles aren't even there and they are seamlessly getting over them and passing them through them. Why? Because they know their hurdles, they know their skills, they know how to get over them, and they're unencumbered. But a new hurdler, like watching someone try to hurdle for the first time is painful. It is so painful. And they're like, knees are bloody. They're hitting every stumbling block because they just haven't learned the skills yet. Mm-hmm. And so we can kind of package this idea of going to therapy and getting help from this perspective of we all need to do this at some point, right? We all need to understand our strengths and our weaknesses and then access the appropriate people in our life to help us thrive, right? And so this is just so that they can better know themselves and that they can get tools to help them be happy and healthy, you know, kids and later adults.
Yeah, that's great. And what would you, so you mentioned earlier, very in the beginning of the episode about having, you know, if you're considering a therapist, try considering one who keeps the parents involved. What are some other things that you would suggest to parents to consider when choosing a therapist?
Yeah, I would think about like what are top priorities for you in regards to your child's well-being and your family culture. Okay, and so it may be helpful to then that's how we can start to kind of weed out, you know, it's important that my child has a male therapist because of XYZ and they'd be more comfortable with that. It's important that my child have a therapist who understands faith or spirituality to some degree and can respect that this is a part of our culture at home that influences behaviors and beliefs and so forth. And so it really just depends on what those values are. So that's what I would recommend. I would think about what's the top priority for this kid, right? And then we go and find a specialist with those things, right? So if your child is struggling with OCD, you should be going to a therapist who specializes in OCD. Mm-hmm. And then thinking of other things in regards to kind of family culture and values. And it doesn't mean that the therapist has to necessarily share and hold those exactly, but that informs the questioning that you can kind of ask that therapist about their thoughts and opinions, feelings, or practices in regards to those domains. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately you just want a therapist who's going to respect, you know, your family culture and those values, you know, and kind of keep you in that process.
Yeah. And so so maybe just to kind of full circle this, you had mentioned the 178 hours of your week, and one of those hours is just with a therapist, and then you have the rest is with the parents in the home. How can parents support their children in the midst of, you know, them going to their therapy sessions and then bringing it home and helping them mm-hmm. kind of manage all that in the home life?
Yeah. So I would just be really clear with the therapist that your kid is going to, that you want to be involved in the process to whatever degree is healthiest for the kid, right? And, and so I know some therapists do, I've kind of done it all. Like I've had some kids who need the parents in there till they feel comfortable and safe with me. And that's completely fine. Other times I have parents who come in, they start 5 minutes giving me the rundown and the check-in because the kid kind of forgets what happened over the week. And the parent is like, no, don't you remember? We had this big issue at school on Monday. And they're like, oh, right. To clue me in on what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then I typically bring the parents back in the last 5 or 10 minutes. My hope and goal is that this kid can explain to them the skills and things we talked about that day. So we're practicing and we're modeling effective communication with mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And then mom and dad know the skills that we're going to be implementing and practicing for the next week. So that's more of my method. Yeah. But ultimately, you know, depending on what's kind of going on with your kid, you want to make sure that they feel comfortable sharing certain things with you. And they're not always going to feel comfortable. You know, I have to remind parents, like, look, we did not tell our parents everything. And because mom and dad hold such a special place in our life, disappointing them is 10 times harder than disappointing a therapist, right? Like, you cannot disappoint me. I don't have that role in your life. So you can tell me all of these terrible things you've done or these things you're going through. And I have zero judgment, zero, like, fear or concern, or like, I'm not going to start, you know, hovering and getting worried, right? But mom and dad will. And so we have to kind of accept that our kids may not always feel super comfortable telling us things. And then we have to be patient with that process. And that sometimes if they need to talk to someone, a third party of any kind feels a little safer at first as I start to navigate some of these difficult and confusing things that I'm going through. And so as long as you have a therapist who is very pro parents being involved and keeping that a healthy relationship, mm-hmm. then I think, you know, it's going to be a helpful and effective process.
And do you have any, like, just even for parents right now, as they're listening, do you have any practical tips for kids who need some, coping mechanisms or just habits that they can start implementing in their life to help them with those stressful moments or the mm-hmm. times where they start to feel anxiety before, let's say, you know, I guess the need for a therapist or anything like that? Do you have any suggestions?
I think that's great. So, okay, a couple of things that come to mind would be, first, when it comes to anxiety, it's a really simple formula. I validate the feeling and I encourage or support the effort, right? I know this is scary. I believe in you. That's it. I don't have to tell them it's not scary. I don't have to tell them they can do it, because why? They're going to start coming to you for reassurance every single time. And I need you to stand on your own 2 feet and say, I'm scared and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I doubt and I'll do it anyways, right? Mm-hmm. I believe in myself. I can go forth, right? Mm-hmm. So as parents, we often start to like really reassure our children and we really want to take away their pain, or we allow them to avoid these situations, right? I don't want to go to school. My tummy hurts. Unless you have a fever, you're going to school. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, especially with anxiety, we're not the softest and kindest and most empathetic, because that's not what they need. They need a little bit of those strict rules and boundaries so that they understand how to get that anxiety and those feelings in check. And so we want to affirm the feeling. I know it's there. It's okay to be scared. Like, I'm scared sometimes too. And then we want to support, affirm, encourage their ability, their capacity to do this anyways. And so when parents can have that kind of formula, it mitigates this, like, I don't know how to respond. I'm not sure what to do. So we want to say, and then later we want to affirm it, right? So we say something like, it's scary sometimes to make new friends. I know that you can do this. Right? Or you are so capable of being a good friend. And then when they come back from that situation, we say, that was so brave of you. I'm so mm-hmm. proud of you. Mm-hmm. Right? And that praise, that validation, them working through the feeling, the anxiety is like a wave. It has its natural ups and downs. It will subside without me having to physically change it. Yeah. So I need them to stay in that uncomfortable situation and let the anxiety come down on its own to reinforce, oh, actually, social situations, I'm safe in social situations. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. So I would say that is a really important one. And then when we kind of notice our kids are starting to get worked up a little bit or get really kind of anxious, what ends up happening a lot of times is that prefrontal cortex, our front brain, turns off, the executive functioning turns off, the back brain turns on and says, we're in survival. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be rational. We're not going to talk through the issue with them once we realize they're kind of elevated and heightened. So we want to calm them down and get that front brain back online. And so one of the ways to do that is, you know, the five senses technique, right? So we say, hey, tell me 5 things you see right now. Mm-hmm. What are 4 things you can smell? 3 things you can hear? 2 things you can touch? 1 thing you can taste, right? What does that do? Well, our senses live in the present moment. So I'm forcing them. I'm telling them what to do to force them back into the present moment. That gets that front brain back online. Because in my current environment, I'm safe. I'm totally fine. So I need to pull back. And then lastly, I would say breathing skills and techniques are always super effective and really helpful. Kids are probably going to be kind of resistant because they're upset and they're agitated. So sometimes we have got to give it like 5, 6, 7 rounds of breath to kind of get them back into a more calm state before we can kind of choose our next steps. But, you know, just taking really big, deep, long breaths in. And so sometimes our kid's not going to listen and we're going to kind of get into this power dynamic and this kind of wrestling. And so I always say, don't do that. We don't need to get into a power struggle, but we can model, like, I'm just going to start deep breathing. Mm-hmm. And eventually they're going to either, like, they're going to calm down because their behavior is not getting the result they want, or they're seeing me breathe and they start to mimic and echo that. And so I would say, you know, those are probably the top three that I can just share quickly.
those are excellent. And they're all kind of, I love how they're rooted in kind of just an independence as well. Like teaching your children, even in the midst of all this stress, to be independent and to encourage them through that, which is so powerful. Because, yeah, that's just a life skill in general, to be able to handle difficult situations on their own. So if they can handle these moments, then they can definitely handle other, you know, more challenging situations, let's say in college or in, you know, beyond. So laying that foundation is so important. Do you have any words of encouragement for our parents, just as they kind of, who might feel overwhelmed by that if their child is struggling and just maybe feeling a little helpless?
Oh, yeah. I would say trust your gut. Trust that parent instinct. You are exactly who your child needs. It's you. You are exactly who your child needs and you are capable, right? There may be a little bit of a deficit, but you're absolutely capable of providing that need. And that might mean that at some point we outsource or that we kind of build our own skills. But I think, you know, parents today really need that encouragement of, no, you are the primary educator of your children. You do know what's best for them. All of these other experts around want to say this and this and this and this, that it can feel as though parents have to take a back seat and that they don't actually know what's best. And so they start to question and second guess. And I would say, slow down and trust that instinct, like tune into yourself and kind of find peace in like, I am exactly who my child needs. And I am capable of providing for the needs that they present, even if they're challenging needs, and that you, that you're exactly where you need to be.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Thank you, Monica, so much. Can you share with us a little bit? I know you have your practice, but is there anything else that you're up to, with your work?
Sure. So I'm a weekly contributor on Relevant Radio. I'm on every Thursdays at 5 p.m. Central Time, where we talk about, I'm on the show, Marriage Unhindered, with my dad, actually, who's a marriage therapist. I work more with families. And so we do, that day particularly, we talk a lot about kind of parenting and adolescent work and things like that. So people can catch me, you know, Thursdays on Relevant Radio. And and I have a private practice, so people can always kind of reach out. And I do kind of consulting and coaching calls too, to help, you know, parents navigate tricky and difficult situations.
Yeah. And that's all online, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. So people can find you at your website. And that is, do you want to tell us what that is? I'm sorry.
It's just monicahindera.com. I kept it so simple.
Sweet.
You can just find me so easily. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Monica, for sharing your expertise in this and giving such encouragement to our parents and knowing that they are capable. I love that you said that. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2025, we are continuing to share the beautiful devotion to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, while providing practical tools and advice for parents, couples, and families. You can help us with this mission by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovefamilyproject.org.